Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Dan and Benny in the Ring, the post-WrestleMania edition, the final episode of Season 1, Dan and Benny in the Ring. I'm Dan Spaziano, joined, as always, by the BS Express himself, Bad Benny, Benny Scala. Benny, how you doing today, buddy?
Well, my friend, when you have a microphone in front of you and you can cuss without somebody beating you with a yardstick, life is good.
Well, let's try and keep it a little family-friendly, although I will admit there's some stuff that made me curse and yell at the TV this weekend. So, Benny, we didn't really get the chance to talk about it last time when we did our predictions. How's dating life going?
Well, you know, once again, I thought it had some promise. You know, I picked this young lady up, and I was going to take her out to a nice restaurant. And I thought, let me do the gentleman thing. You know, it's to prove chivalry is not dead. So I held the car door open for her and let her in. And, she said, oh, wow. And, I closed the door behind her, got in the car and started driving. I thought, well, you know, this one really appreciates, me being a gentleman. I said something like, well, why did you say, oh, wow? And I thought she was going to compliment me on my manners. And she said, well, you know, this is so unusual. Actually sitting in the front seat and, being in the front seat and sitting up, it's a whole new experience for me. So
No. what is it you said once? If a prostitute falls in love, is she heels overhead?
Yeah, heels overhead. That's right.
You are a terrible human being, Benny.
I am. I pray every night for forgiveness.
Awful. Well, like I said, this is our WrestleMania review. We did a prediction show last week. We watched the product over the weekend. And, of course, obviously over the whole weekend, being a two-day show. It was nice. They really beat it into our heads 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day since the WWE had performed in front of a crowd. It was just great to see fans. Benny, you live close to the stadium. What did you think having the crowd?
Yeah, just seeing people at a wrestling match was phenomenal. It's one of those things. I mean, you take it for granted your whole life, and then you go a whole year without seeing it. And I mean, I got kind of what do you call those things at the Thunderdome, the fake people,
the screens.
I was thinking like, is this what I'm going to see the rest of my life? So it was great. I mean, the weather didn't really cooperate, but I don't think a lot of those people really cared. Maybe they did.
Yeah, I mean, you got on the on WWE, you had the screens of the Thunderdome, and AEW had the I don't want to call it a fake crowd, but they had the crowd that was made up of the wrestlers and the backstage people,
right?
And it just wasn't the same. But we had our first big crowd, and Fridays on SmackDown, the before Wrestle Go Home show before WrestleMania, they announced the main event for Saturday was going to be Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, despite Raw announcing the main event to be Lashley and McIntyre. So they announced at WrestleMania we were going to open the show with the title match, WWE Championship match. Bobby Lashley defending against Drew McIntyre, opening night for night one. The way they hyped this up, and correct me if I'm if you disagree with me on these thoughts, Benny, they said that Drew McIntyre had pretty much been the flag bearer for the WWE for the better part of last year. He was the champion. He was the biggest face. He was the draw. He was apparently the merch guy. He was the main man in the company for a year, and as a reward, he got to be the first one to come through the curtain, first entrance of the first match, the first crowd time with a crowd. And I thought that was great. But, and a spoiler here, I predicted Drew McIntyre was going to win the title. When I heard them explain why he was going on first, my very first note is Lashley retains. Because to me, it seemed telegraphed. You're not going to give McIntyre this big public award and then have him win the title. You're right. Not going to do both. But the match itself, I mean, it was a hoss fight, big power moves. The crowd started off kind of dead, honestly, but that was, I don't blame the match. I blame the rain delay. Anybody that's ever been caught in the weather knows it's real hard to get excited when you're sitting in a chair for several hours, soaking wet. I couple of notes I made. It was slower and a little more methodical than I expected. Like, it was a Haas match, but they definitely had some rest spots. They had some just kind of, I don't want to say planned moves, but it definitely seemed more technical. There was a Lashley had a great Northern Lights suplex. That, I mean, that dude's a freak as far as skills go. One note, and this is something that carried on through the entire weekend. And I, Benny, you and I were talking on Messenger during the match or during the weekend. This match set the tone, and it carried for the entire weekend. And I say this: Michael Cole is terrible, and I wrote that caps. His announcing was awful for this. Not just this match, but it seemed like the entire weekend. He is awful, and I don't know. I don't get it, because we've seen the improvement from Corey Graves. We've seen improvement from Byron Saxton. Even Jerry Lawler had some moments. You look on AEW, and Jim Ross clearly still has it. And Tony Schiavone can still bring it when he wants to. There's so many examples of good wrestling commentary. And Michael Cole's just, he's been the face of the commentary team for how many years now? 15 plus?
At least.
And he's awful. And I think he's gotten worse. And it was the script, clearly. I mean, he clearly had talking points, like almost obvious cartoonish talking points. We'll cover it. I'm sure you'll bring it up too. Through the announced team a couple times over the weekend had to cover for things. They always do. It's a live show. It was never Michael Cole doing the ad-libbing. It was just really bad. But I thought it was a great match. However, the last few moments, and this is something that kills me because the WWE does it worse than anybody. Drew McIntyre gets control. He's in the corner. He's doing the hand gesture. He's going to hit the brogue kick, and MVP yells, and that distracts him. Didn't throw the cane. Didn't grab at him. Just shouted. In an arena with live fans for the first time in over a year, and MVP yelling at ringside is enough to distract Drew McIntyre. Lashley gets the Hurt Lock on. McIntyre passes out. Lashley retains. You had a great match, except in the last 30 seconds, Drew McIntyre looked like a complete idiot. And tell me if I'm wrong, Benny. You've been a fan of the business a long time, and you and I have had many hours. We talked about many hours of territory shows that we've watched. How is it that you can be so bad at doing a distraction spot without making your face look like a moron?
Yeah, it's a shame too. And it's funny. I mean, I wish we were on audio, video rather, because I have a note. Announce team is awful, word for word. So, I mean, we both thought alike as far as that goes. I actually was really hoping that, you know, because this whole thing has been so, like, low-key, the build. We talked about the build wasn't really, you know, equal to the build of many of the WrestleManias. So I thought, surely there has to be a hook here. Surely there's going to be something that makes up for the lack of build. And I thought one of the things was going to be maybe a new Hurt Business. Maybe Keith Lee comes out. Maybe Ember Moon comes out. So you didn't have that. And like you said, I mean, I remember one time Alex Rodriguez, when he hit a ball, infield fly, and as he's running to first base, I think he told the second baseman, I got it. And
yeah.
The ball dropped, and I'm thinking, like, man, that really, like, you're a professional baseball player and you fell for that? I mean, it's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's something we've talked about it before. I know you've seen it. Is a distraction spot is great if it works, and people like a Jim Cornette or Bobby Heenan, Freddie Blassie, Colonel Parker, there were guys who could just grab the leg real quick or shake the rope. There were the little subtle, you know, I'm not blatantly obvious that I'm cheating.
Just stand on the ring apron or something like that.
Worked, you know? Right, and it worked great. Now standing on the ring apron works sometimes. But how many times have you seen spots where somebody's jumped on the apron and the ref has to obviously ignore something that's happening? you know, or turn in some awkward position because they have to pretend they're not seeing some guy getting smashed in the face with a chair or whatever. But you can be subtle without your face looking silly. Drew McIntyre, I'm yelling at the TV, like, why did that work, you idiot? Right. You know, and shame, because you had the standard bearer of your company for over a year, the heart and soul of last year's WrestleMania, the heart and soul of much of, other than the Hurt Business, much of what was actually watchable on Raw over the last year, and you chumped him out, and that's a shame. But you called Lashley. You ended up being right. Now, we move on to a backstage segment, the NWO. Some of they had to get their payday in, so they were hanging out. Hogan already changed his shirt, which, can we get to that for a moment? The first night, it didn't seem so bad. Hogan and Titus O'Neil came out. It was very obviously awkward. I mean, clearly, there was no... You know, Hogan and you watch, like, say, Hogan and Jimmy Hart, and there's clearly an alliance there, a friendship, or you see, you know, some of the backstage segments where, you know, like JBL and Ron Simmons, and they're clearly legit, they get along. Titus and Hogan look like two siblings that were fighting, and mom said, "You guys get along for this picture, or I'm beating you both." Like,
almost
they clearly,
like a prearranged marriage, and like that was like they met on their wedding day.
Exactly, and it just seemed awkward, but the crowd seemed into it, at least for the beginning. But that was it. They came out, they did the intro of the opening match, they had this backstage moment where they hung out with the NWO, and that was it. Bayley, and her ding dong, hello, heel Bayley, you know, I'm trying to be cool, I'm trying to get my name out there. She felt like she did more this to host the show than they did, because she comes out later and interferes with the announce team, and she talks, she has her moments. Like, she seemed more like a host than they were, and she was supposed to be the leech. But so the backstage segment was silly. And then you go in, the next match is the tag team turmoil match. The winning team gets to wrestle Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler tomorrow. If you remember, when we did our prediction show, we weren't sure who all the teams were going to be. So we didn't really make a prediction for this. We did both say whoever wins is losing on Sunday, and we'll get to that here in a bit. One thing that threw me off with this is, again, good old Michael Cole, it sounded like he said the quiet part out loud, because they introduced Lana and Naomi, the first team, and then the second team is Carmella and Billie Kay, and Michael Cole straight up says these two were thrown together at the last minute to fill out the roster for this match. Like, they're a makeshift tag team that was thrown together, and it doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, thanks. Right. I'm really invested in their future now. And I will say, and I mean no disrespect, because you have a lot of legitimate talent in this match, but this match was, for the most part, very ugly. There were some obvious botches that the announce team had to save. Lana's kick, for example, where they're, oh, I don't think she got, you know, the infamous, I don't think she got all of it. No, she straight missed, and it looked terrible.
She got none of it.
Yeah. Now I will say, the pin where Carmella held the ropes, because the first team eliminated was Lana and Naomi, where Carmella held the ropes and held Billie Kay's back. I thought that was creative. It felt like it came out of nowhere. Poor Naomi, man. They really seem like they're wasting her, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
But then the next team out was the Riot Squad. I loved their Harley Quinn-inspired gear. I thought that was pretty clever. They were really the MVPs of this match. They tried that ending again, if you remember, and that didn't work. They got caught double team. I like that double team move the Riot Squad does with the splash onto the knees. I thought that was great. Number four, next team out, you got Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. Now, I don't know if you caught this. Did you see that Mandy Rose was the first victim of the slippery entryway?
Oh, I sure did.
Yeah. And she won't be the last, but she was the first that slippery entryway, which is something, actually, if I can backtrack for just a second. When Hogan and Hulk Hogan and Titus O'Neil came out, when the camera zoomed in on them, you could see they were wet. The rain hadn't quite subsided, And it was weird seeing somebody cut a promo while they were clearly getting rained on. And if I may, because I'm going to talk about shots here in a bit, I noticed anytime you watch a sporting event, baseball, football, anything, and it's raining, they always do that shot where they show the lights of the stadium so you can see all the rain coming down. I really feel, and with the lighting they had in Tampa with the special lighting above the pirate ship, I really feel like that was a missed opportunity to show the rain, how heavy it was. Because you told me, you messaged me, it was pouring.
I think I posted something on Facebook that, you know, the fans could do, they had their, you know, they were going to give classes on the Australian crawl, the dog paddle, or the back.
Yeah, you called it. You said before the show started, it was raining. You said there's no way they were going to start on time.
I didn't think so.
And you were absolutely right. But back to what we were saying. So Manny and Dana came out. They did have the matching gear. I think it's a shame you break up Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville just to throw her in another tag team. But her look and style, her and Dana Brooke very much get, I can see why somebody saw them standing next to each other and said, bam, tag team. Again, she slipped. Now I will say Mandy Rose had a great looking, the Riot Squad, great looking blockbuster. That's a hard move to pull off. Now, of course, then the Riot Squad ends up eliminating Mandy Rose and Dana. And as keeping with this match being amazingly not sloppy, they announce the Riot Squad has been eliminated. Correction, Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose have been eliminated. Like, okay, you got one job. Then the final team to come out, Natalya and Tamina. Now, you and I both said that if anybody was going to win, they seemed to be the ones they were building up. We didn't officially predict it, but they came out. They looked dominant. Tamina still has the ugliest punches in the history of wrestling. Her and Shane McMahon can have a bad punch off, which is a shame because everything else she did looked great. I will say I've been a critic of hers in the past. This match in particular is the best I've seen Tamina look wrestling wise. The moves, the crispness, other than her terrible punches, but that's, you can write that off Shane McMahon style. Shane McMahon throws awful punches but can have great matches. But this is the best I think she's looked. And good for her. She's clearly been working. She's clearly improved. If you remember, Natalya had the sharpshooter set up, said no. Tamina hit the splash. Now, I'll admit, and maybe you were thinking the same thing, when Natalya tagged out and said hit the splash, I thought, okay, something's going to happen and they're going to lose because of that. Because you always get that arrogant moment, you know? But nope. Clean, good-looking splash. Probably one of the better-looking splashes. 1, 2, 3. Natalya and Tamina move on to wrestle tomorrow. Ugly, but not bad by any standards. The crowd definitely behind the Riot Squad and into a lot of the moments, including Tamina and Natalya's wrestling, which is nice because every, you know, big slam, suplex, body slam, good drop kick. The crowd was really into this match, and I give them credit for it. But yeah, I think you had Drew Lashley ending on a bad note. Then you had the weird backstage segment. Then you had what was probably the weakest match on the card, at least tonight. Really kind of a slower start than I expected. What do you think?
Same thing. I'm thinking like, okay, so when is this going to get better? You know, I thought they'd start with a bang. I mean, and the first match wasn't bad between Drew and, you know, Bobby. And right. Ending notwithstanding. But that, I mean, that second match, really, it was kind of like eating Brussels sprouts. That was a little bit difficult.
yeah, eating Brussels sprouts. I like that one. Well, I made a note. It's very similar to you. You know, I hope this gets better. And damn it if it didn't immediately.
Oh, yes, it did.
Because the very next match, Cesaro and Seth Rollins. Now, this was the first match. When we went over the reviews, this was one of the ones that I was surprised we disagreed on. I literally wrote one note. I wrote great effing match. So glad I was wrong because this match was incredible match of the night. And this, and I'll tell you, this wasn't, I know it's going to sound weird. This was not a WWE match. This wasn't Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. This was Tyler Black against Claudio Castagnoli. This was a Ring of Honor match. the spots, the slides, the technical prowess, just how it was the Cesaro kept trying to go for the submission and the swing, and Rollins was getting out of it. It was very much Ring of Honor pace. This I can't wait for his review, because he was running it at the time. But this match is exactly the way when Jim Cornette ran Ring of Honor. This was the kind of match he would have put on. And I think that's a and I mean that as a compliment to these guys. It was great. The swing, I lost count. They said 23. Who knows?
23,
crowd,
yes.
Yeah, the crowd kind of loses it. And then, of course, the UFO, as Cesaro called it, where he put he did the airplane spin, but without his hands.
That was incredible.
Absolutely incredible. And not just the visual, but athletics. Yes, Seth Rollins clearly had to kind of balance himself, but the core strength needed to he had a grown man on his shoulders, and he was spinning without holding him, just the shoulder and core strength. They've said for years when they called him the Swiss Superman or the Swiss Cyborg, Cesaro was pound for pound the strongest wrestler in WWE. Absolutely physical. He hits the second neutralizer, 1, 2, 3. He not only won, he won handedly. There was really not any moments in this match where it looked like Seth Rollins was going to win. When he was setting up for the stomp and Cesaro reversed it into the uppercut, you could tell he's going to break out of this. It never felt like Seth Rollins had a chance here. They booked Cesaro super strong. I'm so glad I was wrong on this, because he deserved it 100%. 10 years in the company, his first, I think they said 10 years, and this was his first singles WrestleMania match, and he won handedly against one of the better talents this company's had. Absolutely incredible. What do you think, Benny?
I loved it. I mean, and I had some notes. Seth did a corkscrew frog splash, which I thought was great. Now when Seth did the pedigree, I thought, well, maybe, you know, this might not turn out the way I wanted, but that UFO, I mean, I literally was watching and I just like stopped, like, holy shit. I've never seen anything like that. But I mean, I've watched wrestling for 52 years. I've never seen anything like that. And it was just like, it was just a feel good moment when he won. I mean, you could tell that the whole crowd was happy that he won.
Oh, and yeah. Yeah.
And the genuine emotion on his face.
Yes.
It was just, it was nice all over.
The reaction Cesaro got for picking, for the when the 1, 2, because the crowd chanted, you know, 1, 2, 3. That was easily, I think that was pop of the night, as far as Saturday goes.
Yes.
But moving on, we had another match you and I talked about that we really were looking forward to. This was Cesaro's first WrestleMania singles match. The next match was the New Day defending the tag titles against AJ Styles and Omos in his first match, period. So what were your thoughts on this one, Benny?
Well, I mean, unlike Nicholas, I mean, Omos is going to stay to wrestle another day. I mean, you know, Nicholas is still doing quadratic equations, I think, in, you know, seventh grade algebra.
Right. But,
no, I, you know, it did what it had to do. I mean, you know, AJ got the beat down. Omos came out and he looked pretty much invincible, which I think is what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now that he can pretty much, he can learn like almost like on the job training. He's working with one of the best guys there is in AJ Styles.
Right.
He's going to protect him. You know, he's going to make him, you know, he's going to come in for the good moments, and AJ is going to do most of the heavy lifting. So, you know, as far as New Day goes, so that, you know, they're 11 times, eventually there'll be 12 times. What I do believe Michael Cole said something about them being the greatest tag team of all time. And I almost choked when he said that.
Well, we've established Michael Cole is terrible, and I don't really listen to what he was saying. But, you know, you're right. He did. They mentioned they said the New Day was the most, I think he said either greatest or most dominant, something like that. But I thought, speaking of the New Day, it was nice to see Big E come out to do the entrance. First time the three of them had been a big entrance like that in a while. Actually, speaking of the New Day, I thought it was really interesting, and I made a note of this. They were clearly the faces going into this match, but they wrestled this entire match like the heels. They were doing the cheap tricks to get AJ, and even to the point where the camera could hear Xavier Woods yelling at AJ Styles, which I thought was great. You know, you're not a tag guy, AJ. What we're doing right now is cutting the ring in half. And
I heard that. Yes.
Yeah. And he was like explaining what they're doing. And now, speaking of which, I did make a note. Michael Cole screwed it up again. He mentioned when they were doing their corner stomps, he said JBL coined this the unicorn stomp. No, JBL called it the unicorn stampede. Like, how you get something that obvious wrong? But oh well. But yeah, no, they bring Omos in. Omos was invincible. I think he did. This is exactly how you use him. Because if he has any weaknesses, I couldn't tell. And if he's only going to get better, great. I liked the look he had with the kind of hybrid ring gear / street clothes. I think it was Saxton that mentioned when you're as big as Omos, you can wrestle in whatever you want. But I liked the shirt because it was the athletic, like, button-down sleeper. But, yeah, he looked great. We both called this new tag champs. And I think, eventually, I imagine they'll do the Shawn Michaels-Diesel storyline.
Yeah, they'll split apart. Of course they will.
Which is going to be interesting to see because the logical progression for that would be for Omos to be the babyface. So we'll see how they have a 7-foot, somewhat not verbal baby face down the road, or maybe he turns on AJ, who knows. But I thought it was great. Speaking of big men, next match, Shane versus Braun in the steel cage. Now I'll admit, and we talked about it in the review show, or excuse me, in the prediction show, of all the matches on the entire weekend, this is the one I cared about the least going in. I thought the build was terrible. I've never been a fan of the bully storyline with the stupid CG, with the fake, you know, report cards and the doofus pictures. Shane McMahon's promos were weird. Like, he had one where he stuttered and almost looked like he was sick through, which now apparently they're writing that off as he was just making fun of Braun. But yeah, I thought it was, and of course, you know, we talked about it. Shane McMahon's on the show. That means somebody's not, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bailey, somebody's not getting a match because Shane McMahon had to get one. I thought the start was obvious. You knew something, you know, it's a cage, something's going to happen. Elias and Jackson, or excuse me, was it Jackson Riker?
Jackson came Riker,
out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took out Braun with the chairs. Shane beat Braun pretty good with the chair. Braun came back and forth. Shane kept trying to cheat. Braun was just too strong. I did like the spot where Braun ripped the cage apart and pulled Shane back through the hole in the cage, which I like how they telegraphed that by having Shane, when the chair broke, Shane pulled a piece of the cage off and started beating Braun with it, which I liked. They later showed that the cage was weakened, so Braun was able to rip it open. And then, of course, I guess technically it was Braun throwing him, but Shane jumping off the cage, doing the swan dive. Obviously, it's WrestleMania. Shane McMahon's got to have his big bump. I thought that looked great for Shane being, what, in his 40s now and not a wrestler.
I believe he's actually 50 now.
Yeah, and not a wrestler. That was a hell of a bump. And then Braun, that wasn't it. Braun comes down, power slam, 1, 2, 3. You know, and this is for all the bullies. I admit, like I said, going in, I could care less about this match. This match actually won me over. By the end of it, I wanted to see Braun get to Shane, and I was glad he did. This match really won me over. I cared more about it as it went on, which means it did its job. Braun Strowman looking good. To avoid any spoilers for those that haven't seen Raw yet, that kind of ended quickly, but I liked it, and I think Shane got his comeuppance, and now, because it was such a big bump, maybe you can write Shane off for a while and then push Braun now being the scrappy 7-foot massive underdog, who, by the way, looked to be in the best shape of his life.
Yes.
What do you think, Benny?
Well, actually, I think that, you know, the fake report card was actually Michael Cole's report card from Vince McMahon. They just doctored it to look like bronze. But no, I agree with you. I mean, You know, yes. I mean, could that have been somebody else's payday? Absolutely. I mean, Aleister Black and Braun Strowman, I think they would have had, you know, they would have had a phenomenal match.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, that's Shane McMahon's job, is to make somebody look good at WrestleMania.
Right.
The one thing I thought to myself, you know, if this was 1982 and this was Jimmy Snuka and Lou Albano in a steel cage, and Jimmy would have beat Lou to a bloody pulp before he climbed to the top of the cage and, you know, and did the, you know, the Superfly splash.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess this was the PG version of it. You didn't get any color. I would have thought that was, I mean, if there was going to be any color at this WrestleMania,
right,
this might have been a good spot for it, but you didn't see that. I mean, I had no doubt who's going to win the match, but yeah, I thought it was going to be an immediate payoff. I thought, you know, Braun was going to get in there and beat the living crap out of him. But then you had the Jackson, Ryker, and Elias with the chairs, and you had to wait a little bit for that payoff.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, it did. It was a good, it was, for what it was, it wasn't a bad match at all.
Oh yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I like, and you and I have talked about that before several times, actually. There, I get the PG era, but yeah, you're right. Sometimes matches work better when there's color. Like, sometimes, you know, you have brutal last man standing matches, and I watch people get slammed through tables and hit with chairs and all this beating, and there's not a drop of blood.
Right.
But 10 years ago, Bruno would punch somebody a couple times in the corner and they'd be bleeding.
The ring post. Instant color.
You know, sometimes color helps, and I think this match would have been one of it. But yes, that's not really a criticism. That's just the nature of the game now. Moving on to the match I know you were most excited for, your first celebrity involvement of the weekend, Bad Bunny and Damian Priest against Miz and Morrison. What were your thoughts on this one?
Well, I have like a dichotomy of opinions. I mean, I thought Bad Bunny did a phenomenal job. I mean, as far as, you know, his wrestling, I thought he would. I mean, I thought that Damian Priest was going to pretty much do all the heavy lifting, and then, you know, he's going to get Miz in a compromising position, tag in Bad Bunny, who was going to get the pin.
Right.
I never thought they were going to book it the way they did, but I mean, I think the guy did great. I think, you know, he really put his heart and soul into it. I can't fault him one bit. You know, he did the work, and he did a great job. My issue is, though, that, you know, having a guy, you know, 5'6", I don't even know how big he is, 5'6", 130 pounds.
Right.
Train for 2 or 3 months and then hold their own with the, you know, the guy who was the world champ, 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
It just kind of takes a giant dump on the business. And now, I mean, even though we're like, you know, it's no longer kayfabe, I still, you know, to me, even still to this day, I think, well, these guys are incredible athletes, and they're in a class by themselves. But now I'm just afraid, like, every 5'6" guy, 130 pounds, thinks, well, I can go to the performance center for 2 months and I can pin, you know, I can pin Roman Reigns or something like that.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I said the same thing in my notes, that this was the opposite of a celebrity match. Bad Bunny, you know, usually, like you said, the celebrity kind of comes in for the hot spots and that's it. Bad Bunny, really, this was a replica of the New Day almost AJ match, where Bad Bunny came in and he played the role of AJ Styles. He took most of the heat. He wrestled probably 3/4 of the match. He had great interactions with The Miz and Morrison. He really impressed. And I think what sold me on Bad Bunny was the ring psychology was there. His facial expressions, the way he sold moves, the way he did moves. He not only clearly had been training, but he clearly cared about the integrity of the business. He wasn't out there to be, you know, celebrity whoever, to throw one punch and knock out the Big Show,
right?
You know, or body slam somebody, and that's like the, you know, the most devastating move ever. You know, William Shatner does a monkey flip on Jerry Lawler, and Jerry Lawler sells it.
Yep.
Right. And Jerry Lawler sells it like he'd just been run over by a truck, you know? Which, by the way, William Shatner, that was still as a kid, that was great to see. Well, as a teenager, that was awesome to see because I love William Shatner. But point is, this match was great, but I have one major beef, and that's this is the first match where I really started to notice the jump cuts. And I saw them for the rest of the weekend where Bad Bunny's throwing some punches and the camera angle changes three or four times in a matter of a few seconds. Like, and then there's spots where there's camera cut, zoom. I mean, I almost feel like some of the WrestleMania should have come with an epilepsy warning. Like, it was like watching an action sequence. Yeah, it was an action movie directed by Michael Bay. And the biggest beef I had with this match was there was one moment, it was probably the big moment of the match they were building for. Bad Bunny hit a Canadian Destroyer on John Morrison. And take notes, Young Bucks. That's what a Canadian Destroyer is supposed to look like. It looked great. John Morrison obviously did, you know, the person taking the Canadian Destroyer does most of the move. But it looked great. However, the camera cut to facing Bad Bunny, where you can clearly see Morrison is lifting his head and you can clearly tell there's no impact. And I think if they had kept the angle they were on, the move would have looked a lot more realistic. It was an unnecessary camera cut that, hey, I mean, how many times have you seen that where they'll zoom in on somebody while they're throwing punches and you're like, oh, wait a minute, you're not actually hitting him. Like, it looked better 5 feet away, you know?
Right.
And I'll go back for a second. Takeover. NXT TakeOver had a moment, and I mentioned it in our online chat, where Walter, they sold the chop. Walter chopped a table in half, and that was trying to sell in his match with Tommaso Ciampa how strong Walter's chops are. Looked great. Holy crap. By the way, Walter Tommaso Ciampa was match of the weekend, or match of the week, period, including Mania. But so go watch that if you haven't seen it, everybody. But the camera then zoomed in on the table, and you could clearly see the cut where the serrated edge was almost cartoonishly perfect, and it was blatantly obvious the table was gimmicked. You know, completely unnecessary camera angle that just ruined the moment. And that's what I think they took some of the steam out of Bad Bunny. But Bad Bunny got the, you know, they got the, him and Priest got the win. Thoroughly impressed. He's not going to stick around long term. They've announced he's got a tour coming up, which good for him. I wish him all the success in the world, but it's really refreshing to see. I think Stephen Amell, when he had the SummerSlam match with Neville and against Stardust and Wade Barrett, Stephen Amell being the actor that plays Green Arrow, I think that's the last time I saw a celebrity where it was blatantly obvious that they trained hard and cared about the business. And so this match really impressed. I made some jokes. You and I have both made some jokes. But Bad Bunny deserves all the respect in the world for what he did on Absolutely. This night. So good for him. Now, moving on to the main event that they announced Friday. Sasha Banks defending the SmackDown Women's title against Bianca Belair. This was impressive because it's a main event at WrestleMania with female athletes. Only the second time in history that's ever happened, and the first time that your main event has been two women of color. Which, if you noticed, be it Lashley, be it the New Day, Amos, tomorrow with Big E, the color this WrestleMania, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a bit for a second here. This WrestleMania really proved that the color barrier in the WWE is gone. A primary focus of the biggest show of the year, one of the biggest shows you've put on technically ever, because it's the first time you've had fans during in over a year because of a global pandemic. And a good chunk of the focus was on people of color, minority athletes. I think that's awesome, given the track record they've had. We have come a long way from Crime Time and Saba Simba, that's for sure. But main event, Sasha Banks, Bianca Belair, it was exactly what you and I said it was going to be. It was great. It was a sleeper for, you know, match of the night. It was I still think Cesaro Rollins was better, but these two delivered. They showed that why they're champions. And I liked before the match started, Bianca Belair especially, but they were both clearly getting emotional because, you know, the moment was there, the crowd. It really sucked you in. It's still real to me, damn it. You know, it felt you had that moment. I think they did two things of note. Sasha Banks did a dive to the outside and didn't nearly kill herself. First time I've seen that in a long time. So good for her on working on her suicide dive. And they protected Bianca Belair by the numerous spots. There was several times throughout the match Sasha Banks tried to land a Meteora, which is unfortunately a move she's injured people with several times in the past. And Bianca Belair, they avoided it. She dodged it, blocked it. So she never took a Meteora during the match, which I thought was a wise move. And then, holy crap, you and I talked about it. The whip, what'd you call it? The hair whip heard around the world?
Hair whip, yeah.
Yeah. Bianca Belair whipped Sasha Banks with her hair. The crack, you could immediately start seeing the welt form on Sasha Banks, that long red welt she had. I mean, holy cow. My wife and I reacted the same hearing that. Seeing that, and then the Bianca Belair with the finisher, bam, 1-2-3, new champ. It was great, and I liked that they saved it, because if you remember when Bianca Belair was in NXT, when she was in NXT, she used to use the hair whip. That was like part of her repertoire. She hit people with her hair all the time.
Right.
She hasn't done that on the main roster, and they saved it for just the right moment. Absolutely great. What do you think, Benny?
Loved it. Loved it. It was a great match. Now, of course, I don't know if you remember that Michael Cole once again botched this one, because didn't he say that Sasha kicked out?
Yeah, when she pinned her, 1-2-3, Michael Cole started yelling, kick out, Sasha kicked out, or kick out by Sasha. Again, Michael Cole sucks on commentary. But yeah, I thought it was great. First night, yeah, the crowd was a little slow, but you really picked up. And of course, it's not their fault. It was raining. It was kind of bad weather. But the crowd was hot. They were there. They made the show. I think there were some moments on the show that would not have worked in front of the Thunderdome or in an empty arena. The crowd noise just really sold it. Prediction-wise, you had me on this night. You were perfect. You were 6-0. I was 4-2. I'm going to catch up tomorrow, though, I said.
I was feeling Sunday. Good after Saturday night.
Yeah, all good. Well, then we moved to Sunday, and in very similar fashion, here come Hogan and Titus. This time they're dressed like pirates, and I actually made a note that the pirate costumes looked cheap. They looked like Party City. Jack's, you know, they wouldn't call him Jack Sparrow. They would say, you know, Bird Pirate Captain or something. They were the Party City knockoff costumes.
Pirate suits.
Exactly. I did like that Hulk Hogan's pirate outfit was still red and yellow. I thought that was great. And you messaged me when this was happening, because I didn't hear it yesterday or on Sunday or excuse me, Saturday, but the crowd booed loudly and obviously every time Hulk Hogan opened his mouth.
Sir.
And I don't know if there's maybe it was, they were trying to make a point, because there was accusations they piped crowd noise in yesterday or on Saturday. Maybe they were trying to make a point. Maybe the crowd hasn't quite moved past his racial indiscretions, which I don't blame anybody for not forgiving people for those kind of words. Or maybe it, because this night did such a good job focusing on young, new, up-and-coming stars. Maybe that was their statement of saying, you know, you don't have this night hosted by a veteran from 30 years ago. But yeah, they booed Hogan quite loudly, quite noticeably, but at another awkward exchange. Unfortunately, then we move on to the next match. You and I had very similar thoughts on this one, I know, because we talked about it as it was happening. A giant jack-in-the-box gets rolled to ringside, and out comes Randy Orton for his match with The Fiend. Now, I give Randy Orton credit. I loved his new ring attire, the white and red that he was wearing. And then here comes Alexa Bliss. She turns the crank. The Fiend comes out of the box. He's healed. He's rejuvenated. He's the new Fiend. What the living hell was this, Benny? He has his exchanges with Orton. He no-sells a suplex on the table. He no-sells some punches. This is the guy that kicked out of, what, like five curb stomps? And good Lord. So Fiend healed, question mark, I wrote. And then I wrote another curse word here afterwards. The Fiend has the Randy where he wants him. All of a sudden, crazy music starts playing. Alexa Bliss is sitting on top of the Jack in the Box, and her headpiece is noticeably bleeding that infamous black goo. The Fiend gets distracted. Randy Orton, one RKO, 1, 2, 3, and then he gets the hell out of there. The crowd absolutely went ballistic with booing this match. You would have thought Hogan was in the ring at this point with how loud they were booing. I wrote what the F, and then back-to-back boo starts. And I said that because the start of WrestleMania was identical. And by that I mean, hear me out on this one. You had both nights started the same exact way. You had the anthem played, the Vince McMahon intro, Titus and Hogan, awkward exchange. Then a match where you knew, the crowd absolutely knew who was going to win, but they lost because of a lame-ass distraction that the crowd hated. And then the next segment is Bayley in a really awkward exchange with some Hall of Famers. Both nights started the same way before they picked up. I thought it was weird that they did it that way, but this match, holy cow, what the hell? Awful, awful, awful. The Fiend is dead, and I don't mean that as in he was like a couple months ago when he was murdered. I mean, you cannot salvage the character now. I thought maybe Burned Fiend could have been the second coming of Kane, but no. You've had, in the last couple years, you've had the Fiend get squashed by Goldberg. You've had him fall to one RKO because of a lame distraction. And he was in the worst Hell in a Cell match ever, which ended with ref stoppage because Seth Rollins was beating him up too much. Like, I mean, come on. It's terrible. I don't know what Bray Wyatt did to piss Vince McMahon off, but the Fiend is gone. He's dead. Just get rid of him. Or do what WCW did with Glacier. You know, give the Fiend the awesome entrance and just have him lose constantly. Which, it's a shame because Ray Lloyd's a friend of the show and he's a great guy. But I thought this was easily worst moment of the weekend. What do you think?
So I have my son Dan has this expression. It's a word, D-A-F-U-Q. And
yeah,
I have that written that here word. In capital letters with a question mark. Like, what? So, and then I had another note, you know, Papa Shango was backstage. And, you know, so Alexa Bliss's helmet was leaking blacktop.
Oh, like the Ultimate Warrior. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So it made no sense. And like you said, they can't be that stupid. And my statement is that I can't believe that was the Fiend. And I'm going to stick with that. I think I'd like to think that there's going to be a storyline that, you know, the Fiend got caught in traffic or, you know, wherever he was. And so they had to use the Fiend light, you know. The faux Fiend.
Well, I mean, there was some people commenting that they weren't sure if that was Bray Wyatt in there. I mean, photos have revealed it was, at least it looks like it was because of tattoos and body markings. But he was noticeably smaller and more in shape than Burned Fiend, which means the jacket or top that the Burned Fiend was wearing was clearly a very heavy padded coat. And not like a tighter attire. This just was just garbage. The crowd shit all over it.
And rightly so.
There's videos online after the cameras cut away of the crowd continuing to boo very wildly while they're getting that Jack in the Box out of there. It was just awful. I thought it was terrible. I don't care. The defense is that the story is more important than the match, which not at WrestleMania. It's not. And so now the big reveal is going to be that Alexa Bliss has been the superpower now. Maybe the Fiend is a pawn. there's they talked about it on Raw, but I don't care. I'm pulling. You know, Jim Cornette has what do you call it? The Hardy rule, where he fast forward through anything Matt Hardy's involved with. I'm instituting the Fiend rule for our future reviews, yeah, Benny. I'm not watching anything the Fiend is in. I'll fast forward through it. That's my lunch break. Moving on to a surprise. What I made is a surprise of the night. The Women's Tag Championship match, Tamina and Natalya versus Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. The crowd was really into this match, probably because it was the first good thing they'd seen all night. And I mean, when I say into it, they were very much behind Natalya and Tamina. And I actually made a note that, because I remember I talked about how I said on Saturday that was the best I'd seen Tamina look.
Yes.
The crowd was behind her. And I think part of that was she won them over Saturday. Sunday, they wanted to see her win. Nia Jax, weakest part of this match by far. Some serious botching on her part. Luckily, she didn't injure anybody. I made a note. There was a spot where Nia Jax was on the top, well, the second rope. And Tamina and Natalya just kind of had to stand there and literally were making the hand gesture like, come on, jump. And they were both like, come on. And she finally did the crossbody. It was obvious it was a setup, but it was just really bad. She dropped Tamina at one point. She dropped Natalya at one point. Nia Jax, weakest part of this match by far. I did like the finish, though. They had a spot, and Shayna Baszler got the blind tag. Natalya had finally gotten the Nia Jax and the sharpshooter, reminded me of Brett Yokozuna, with the where they were struggle, you know, her legs are too big and can she get her over? And while she was fighting with the sharpshooter, Shayna Baszler gets her in the Karakuta clutch. Natty, and she didn't tap, she passed out. So you save your strength there. But I thought this was, by no means is this match going to win any awards, but it definitely was the surprise for me of the night. And I liked it, and I think the right, we talked about it in our predictions, I think the right people won, because Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler have a good run going, and most of the other tag teams, be it Tamina and Natalya, be it Billie Kay and Carmella, Lana and Naomi, pretty much every major tag team you've got right now, except these two, have been together for less than 3 months. And so I like that, you know, you've got to keep going with your strong names there. But what do you think, Benny?
I thought it was a decent match. I really did. I enjoyed it. I kind of hold my breath with Nia Jax because I always think she's going to hurt somebody. And I thought the exact same thing, you know, like, and I'm not a fan of these dives. I mean, even Drew did one in his match to Lashley. It's like, you know, you're waiting there like a deer in the headlights, just waiting for this person to dive at you so you can catch them. It's like, but with this one though, it was painful. It took a long time to develop. It's like one of them could have went out for a sandwich and came back and then, you know, took the bump. So yeah, I'm with you on that. But at the same time, I'm glad that they're actually starting. I mean, they're giving a lot of these women something to do. I mean, there's a lot of talented women on the WWE roster. And so, I mean, having a tag team division, you got like, you know, four or five respectable tag teams. So that's not a bad thing either.
No, you're right. And I like that they're trying to build and how some of these teams are credible. Lana and Naomi, Carmella, Billie Kay, the Riot Squad. They're building these teams where anybody can win at any time. There's not one obvious jobber team. There's not one obvious dominant team. So I like what they're doing with that one. Moving on. Next match is another celebrity involvement. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn with Logan Paul, who I had somewhat forgotten who he was. I'm not going to lie. I had to kind of, oh yeah, that's the YouTube guy who got in trouble for the incident in the forest. But yeah, this was, again, Ring of Honor match. This was Kevin Steen and Generico. But what are your thoughts on this one, Benny?
I have a note. I said, these guys are like Chinese food, at least to me. There was a time in my life about 18, 19 years ago, and I counted. I had Chinese food 56 nights in a row. Just same as same as Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak in 1941.
Right.
And not only did I have the same, I had the exact same thing every night. And I never got tired of it. And like, that's how I am with these guys. I love watching these guys. I could watch these guys every day the rest of my life. They're always going to put on a good match. You know, they're never going to disappoint me. I enjoyed it. And I mean, I kind of knew how it was going to end. I didn't really, you know, know how Logan Paul was going to fit in. And I kind of liked what happened with him at the end, too.
Yeah, he really didn't factor into the match.
No.
He was there for the finale, and of course it was good seeing, which, by the way, another good for him. I thought he did a great job selling the stunner.
Absolutely.
But no, you're right. This is one of those, the crowd chants fight forever, and I could see it. I will say I expected some kind of big move. Like maybe Kevin Owens jumping off the pirate ship or jumping off the sign like he did last year. But I thought it was great. A great match. And you and I had it. Kevin Owens was the clear winner, obvious winner. And it didn't feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you fell their way. This didn't feel like a definitive end. Like I could see them continuing to fight down the road.
Yes, absolutely.
So the next match. We had our, this was one of our disagreements. We had Sheamus and Riddle wrestling for, Riddle defending his Intercontinental title, excuse me, the United States title. Riddle, we've been watching Raws and the pay-per-views. Was there a definitive moment where Riddle stopped being the goofy fighter and just became the straight Spicoli stoner character?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, they went heavy. Even they had a backstage segment where RVD came out and literally gave Riddle RVD brand rolling papers. And like, I mean, he handed them out to everybody. But, you know, at what point did Riddle just become the stoner goofball and not the legitimate fighter that he was?
He's Jeff Spicoli, 2021.
He is. He's clearly Spicoli. It's almost comical. But comedy aside, I thought this match was great. The back and forth, it was a brawler Haas match. There was one spot Sheamus would look like he was going to go for white noise off the top rope, and he slipped.
Yep.
And but he sold it so well, like he kind of jumped down and then immediately hit white noise, and they played off it great. It was one of those moments where. It could have been planned. They did. They recovered from it so well. But, and then I'll admit, the finish of this match, Riddle with the backflip off the middle rope, getting brogue kicked out of midair. Sheamus busted his mouth open. The shot was a little stiff. 1-2-3. Sheamus is the new champ, which I think is great. Well deserved. I don't think he gets enough credit in wrestling circles for everything he did for the company last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I was wrong on this. And another Michael Cole botched during the match because I think he called another brogue previously that was just a knee.
Mm.
And, you know, but then, of course, he did the brogue from nowhere. When that was a great spot, though, when Spicoli did the backflip and Sheamus was just waiting there. But, I did some, you know, a little bit of research on Sheamus. I mean, he's one Intercontinental Championship away from being a Grand Slam winner. He's very quietly has carved out a very great career. And I mean, the guy, I think he's like 43 or 44, but you never know. The guy's in phenomenal shape. He can still go. I mean, I'm sure he's got, you know, years left.
Yeah.
And I maybe get another world title run. I like the guy. He's solid. He, you know, he's very entertaining. So I'm glad he won.
Yeah. And, like I said, they built him. He's even in his losses to McIntyre, he still looked very strong. I think it gives credibility to the U.S. title to have it carried by somebody who could easily be in the main event. And I well deserved. It's been a while since Sheamus has had some gold, so hopefully they can build from here. But moving on from one undercard title to the next. The next match was Big E defending his Intercontinental title against Apollo Crews. I actually made a little side note. My wife made a joke when they introduced Apollo Crews as the Nigerian prince that my wife made the joke that he still owes her some money from those emails. But this was a Nigerian drum match, which was introduced as just a no holds barred. It's a street fight with more steps. The ring was surrounded with all the traditional Nigerian weapons, you know, kendo sticks and folding chairs and a gong, which anytime anyone sees a gong with an oriental design, Nigeria is the first thing they think of.
It's got it written all over it. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. This was just another street fight, excuse me. They're just beating the crap out of each other with kendo sticks. The drums were just there. They never really factored into the match at all. So this could have been anything. Like I said, it's a street fight with extra steps. There were some hard spots. Big E's spear through the ropes. Apollo's bump through the table. There were definitely some moments where it's like, ooh, that looked like it hurt. You know, you hate to say it, but that looked like it hurt for
real. Uranagi on the ring steps. That looked painful.
Yes, exactly. And this was back and forth, and then Apollo going for the big splash, just eats dirt straight through the table. Big E hits him with the big ending. Looks like he's going to defend, and then out comes Dava Kato, or at least I don't know what name he's going to use now, but he was Dava Kato when he was in Raw Underground, and he's dressed in the military jacket, coming out looking like Gaddafi, and I'm surprised because Dava Kato was the dominant, I don't want to say hero, but he was the dominant figure in Raw Underground. And then Braun Strowman beat him in a Raw Underground fight. And then Raw Underground kind of went away. I thought Dava Kato would factor into the Shane McMahon because they kind of, hey, Braun Strowman killed Raw Underground. That's why I hate Braun Strowman. But Dava Kato is half Nigerian, so it actually makes sense for his character here. He's looking like he's going to be the muscle, which good for him. But when you look like Apollo Crews, do you really need a henchman? But yeah, Dava Kato came out, beat up Big E. Apollo Crews, 1-2-3, new champ. I think the right person won here. I like the fact that it was dirty because it kind of protects Big E. But now you've got a strong, evil Nigerian faction. So what do you think, Benny?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I mean, well, I think his name is Commander Aziz, is what I saw online.
Okay.
But, I mean, do you really need that if you're Apollo Crews? I mean, he doesn't strike me as being the cowardly heel.
Right.
You know, you, typically, a cowardly heel is going to need the reinforcement. But, you know, who knows where this is going to go. Like you said, Big E's protected. My only thing is, you know, you build this up as a Nigerian drum match, and you have all these Nigerian drums all over the ring. But it was a no holds barred, you know, street fight. Like you said, there was really nothing that made it a Nigerian drum match. Well, you know, there was nothing special that happened that way.
Yeah, the drums didn't figure in. There was nothing Nigerian themed about the weapons. You know, sometimes when you have like your Halloween street fight or something, the weapons are, you know, Christmas, the weapons will be candy canes or pumpkins or something. The weapons weren't Nigerian themed. I mean, obviously, I didn't expect the ring to be surrounded with like spears or African war clubs or something like that.
But the first thing they did was beat the crap out of each other with a kendo stick.
Yeah, like I said, a kendo stick and a gong with an oriental design, like exactly, just like old school Nigeria. But I thought this was great for what it was, and it really, the crowd was into it, which led to the next match. The crowd's still hot. Women's tag match. Now, this is the match, I'll admit, I said in our prediction show, I thought this was going to be match of the night, whatever night it was on, because this is going to be Rhea Ripley Asuka defending her women's title against Rhea Ripley. Now, this match started very badly, not for the wrestling, but for how just awful the sound was on Rhea Ripley's entrance, which the band was performing live. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know if you saw this or not, but Rhea Ripley, when she came out, she noticeably had that, like, almost what the hell couldn't tell whether to wince or smile look on her face.
I saw that. Yes,
she
sir.
Could tell the music was awful. And, you know, it's a shame because it's not a bad song. And by no means are they not talented musicians, but maybe it was a sound thing. Maybe she didn't warm up her voice. The entrance was awful, which was kind of the theme of the night, because I thought the live performance for Big E's entrance was also terrible. But yeah, so get that out of the way. You got Rhea and Asuka. Great match. I mean, just absolutely great match. Rhea Ripley, clearly the heel working this match. She was doing the slaps. She was more aggressive. But then Asuka flipped that switch, and there's green eye paint, Japanese company Asuka, like overseas, where she was just this vicious machine. That you saw that Asuka in this match, and I really liked that, because Rhea Ripley is the best person to have that kind of match with Asuka, and it was great. The only thing I noted is the finish kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. Like there was no big buildup. It was just back and forth. Bam, Rhea blocks the move. Hits her pump handle slam, 1, 2, 3, that's it. I made a note, and tell me if you disagree with me on this one. I love Rhea Ripley. I think she's one of the best talents they've got. She is the next breakout star. I can see Rhea Ripley being John Cena, Batista, The Rock, going on to a movie career. She looks like a badass action movie star. But her finish does not fit her. Rhea Ripley should be using the big boot, like Test and some of the big guys used to use, you know, that running big kick. You know, I think she should use, or some kind of kick finisher. When you're built like she is, a pump handle slam just doesn't really feel like it fits you. But I'm not complaining. That didn't take away from the match at all. I just thought it was great. What do you think, Benny?
You know, up until that, Sunday night, I wasn't really that big of a fan of hers. She converted me on Sunday night. I have a note. I mean, just her intensity was incredible. I thought she actually got a pretty big pop from the crowd as well.
Yeah, despite wrestling as the heel, she was clearly very over.
She, and I had a note, there was a spot where Asuka had a leg lock, and somehow Rhea reversed it and did a German suplex. I thought that was excellent. I have a note, and you know, I'm old enough to have seen John Lennon at Madison Square Garden in 1974. So I have a note, brutality was brutal. So I guess for me, the bar's a little bit higher maybe than most people, because I did have the honor of seeing John Lennon and Elton John at Madison Square Garden. But yeah, like you said, maybe it was the weather, maybe they didn't warm up. But I mean, all in all though, I enjoyed this match. I actually gave it an A. I gave it 4 stars. And I completely agree with you that Rhea Ripley is going to be the next big thing in WWE.
Yeah. And now you've got Rhea Ripley and you've got Bianca Belair as your women's champions. And I hope it stays that way for a long time, because those two are by all means the future of the wrestling. I liked the transition. You had your run with the Four Horsewomen. You know, clearly Bayley is not a main eventer anymore. Sasha just passed the torch. Becky Lynch is still out. Of course, Charlotte's going to probably come back and beat somebody, because she's still got another 10 title runs in her somewhere. But you started to build the future. NXT, you've got like Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon. And there's a foundation for a strong women's division for many years to come. And this night was a passing a torch for now. I don't get me wrong, Becky, Bayley, Sasha, the Four Horsewomen can still be main eventers when it comes to the title picture, but they don't have to carry the division anymore, and I like that. But we move on to the final match of the night, the one that I said had the best build of any of the matches on the weekend, the match I was most looking forward to as far as build and story goes, the Triple Threat. Now, you and I disagreed on this one. You picked Edge. I said that Roman Reigns would retain. And this match was good for what it was. And I have some notes here, but it was good for what it was for a triple threat. I had two major issues with it. the Jey Uso interference was beyond excessive, which is unfortunate because, yes, I get it. It's a triple threat match. It makes sense. But it's the same, it reminds me of the same thing you said about Apollo. Head of the table, tribal chief Roman Reigns is not a chicken shit heel. He doesn't need somebody to cheat for him every match. Now, granted, Paul Heyman with the handcuffs and that kind of stuff, but it felt excessive. And let's be honest, when Jey Uso got taken out and got carried to the back, did anybody think he was done? You knew he was going to come back for the finish, yeah, right? So you had some great back and forth. Daniel Bryan continues to prove he's the best wrestler on the planet. Edge doesn't feel like he missed a step. This wasn't WrestleMania Edge last year in his very slow last man standing match with Randy Orton. This was old school Edge, and of course Roman Reigns, the powerhouse. But what do you think, Benny, up to this point?
Normally these three-way matches are sometimes a bit awkward. I thought they had enough combined chemistry that they did make it work. And I agree with you. You want to have Jey Uso kind of, you can have him interfere, but like pick your spots. It was just, he was a constant presence in that match.
Yeah, no, you're right. Now, we built up to the match. You mentioned it, Jey Uso. Walk us through the finish, Benny.
So you get Edge rendering Daniel Bryan incapacitated with a concerto, and you're thinking, well, maybe, and I'm thinking like, hot damn, I picked it right. Damn, if Edge got, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. So he died by the concerto, and I thought it was pretty symbolic that Roman Reigns pinned the both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that spot where he dragged Edge over. Of course, Edge only got taken out after Jey Uso interfered again. I felt it kind of hurt the ending because it took the wind out of Roman's sails. Roman could have won dominantly and pushed the Tribal Chief. But now, this is two pay-per-views in a row. You tap out to Daniel Bryan, but the ref doesn't see it because Edge cheats. And now you pin Edge and Daniel Bryan because Jey Uso cheated for you. Roman Reigns had two moments in back-to-back pay-per-views where he was not the best wrestler in the ring. And that's hard to continue being the head of the table badass if you keep either losing or having your teeth, you're winning by the skin of your teeth because you cheat. But the crowd, it was kind of what the crowd expected. They booed Roman. The crowd was behind Edge and Daniel Bryan for this match, and I think it was exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah, and I really think they're investing big time in Roman Reigns, and I think rightly so. I mean, the guy's going to go on for years, I think.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. He's the future, and I think heel Roman is probably the best villain they've got right now.
That's a long time, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. This is honestly, and I know he wasn't overly popular, but I would say heel JBL as far as crowd reaction and just in it, like character, heel character, I think, is how far you have to go back, really, to see someone who on SmackDown, obviously, not just in general, was like, holy crap, this guy's he's going to be a good heel for a long time. I liked it. But we ended you started Saturday great, Sunday not so much. I ended up getting you final results. You were 9-4 in your predictions. I was 10-3 in my predictions. I'm glad I was wrong where I was, and I know you said you were glad you were wrong where you were. I thought it was an overall show. What do you grade it, Benny?
I'd say like a B minus. And, you know, maybe if they had, like, because the build was so low key, all weekend I'm thinking like, okay, when is it coming? When is that moment going to hit me that, you know, this is what they were keeping from me. This is what's going to make it worth it. And not that it was a bad card by, it was a very good event. it just didn't have that one spectacular little, you know, the surprise that I was waiting for. So, I mean, that was where it failed me. But otherwise, I mean, it was good. It established a lot of things it needed to establish, and but it was just missing that one little magic moment.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I gave it a high, like, I'm being generous because of the crowd and because it was just nice to see again. I gave it a B. Maybe if I'm feeling extra generous, like a low B plus. But yeah, I agree with you.
About I a thought 3.4. There was
really, what's that?
About a 3.4.
Yeah, 3.4 out of 5, right? I think it's hard to tell where the weak moments were, but there were definitely some moments, like obviously The Fiend, but there were some moments where it didn't feel like WrestleMania. It just
kind of felt like the announcing was very weak.
The announcing was terrible, but it just, it, there was no moments, you know, there was no Hulk Hogan slamming Andre. There was no Steamboat Savage. There was no moments where you're like, holy crap, this is WrestleMania. Now, you had some great title changes and a lot of them this weekend, but you're right. I didn't really get that one oomph WrestleMania moment that's going to live on. Maybe the hair whip, but you know, I don't see anything from this weekend appearing in the WrestleMania highlight packages 10 years from now.
Nope.
Like how Hogan Andre or Austin stunning Shawn Michaels, moments like that where they're going to be in the highlight packages forever. I don't really see anything from this show being in the highlight packages, hell, 5 years from now. But overall, B, that's not a bad deal for your first time with the crowd. And of course, they advertised it at the show. WrestleMania season will continue because the next pay-per-view is called WrestleMania Backlash. Merging. Hopefully, it's literally the backlash from WrestleMania. But any closing thoughts on the night, Benny?
You know, I want to try to be positive. You know, the positive, like I said, was seeing people at a wrestling event who, you know, paid a lot of money and got very wet, but I think, you know, probably went home pretty happy for the most part, you know, after they got over their disgust with the Fiend Randy Orton match. I think there were other matches after that made up for it. So, you know, it was what it was. It by no means was it bad. It just wasn't great.
Yeah, like you said, solid B. I agree. I mean, we've got a lot going on. This is a great way to end the first season of our new show. How do you think we've been doing so far, Benny?
I'd give us like maybe a low A minus. I don't know, maybe like a 3.75, enough to make the Dean's list, like cum laude. Not magna or summa, but you know, at least cum laude.
There you go. Yeah, I like it. I think we've done great. Next week will be the first episode of our new season, and we keep chugging along. And we grow every day on the Facebook page. We grow on our platforms, and we would not have done that without the fans that we have. And I love it. So for WrestleMania, for the weekend, for Bad Benny, the BS Express himself, I'm Dan Sebastiano. Have a good one, and as always, happy wrestling.
Night, folks.